Yes, let me try this. Professor Hynek, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, let me introduce you, and then let me throw some questions at you, and both in respect to your recent New Orleans trip and the UFO experience of scientific inquiry, if you'll give me a moment for this introduction. Our guest is Dr. J. Allen Hynek. He is currently director of the Lindheimer Astronomical Research Center at the Northwestern University. He is also chairman of the Department of Astronomy at Northwestern. A Chicago-raised scientist, he holds a Ph.D. in astronomy from the University of Chicago. His first book, published by Ballantine recently, is The UFO Experience, a Scientific Experience. That book is described as a logical and rational look at the facts. Professor Hynek returned yesterday from New Orleans after sharing observations with colleagues regarding the so-called mystery sphere. That sphere discovered a few weeks past by Terry Matthews near Jacksonville, Florida. Let me ask you first, Professor Hynek, about your latest evaluations of the sphere. Do you consider this now extraterrestrial or Earth-manufactured?
No, there's no evidence whatsoever that neither I nor the other members of the UFO panel can find that would indicate that it is extraterrestrial. That doesn't, of course, absolutely prove it isn't, but there is no obvious evidence, such as, for instance, if it had come in from outer space, then I undoubtedly would have had some sort of ablation or burn marks on it, and it seems like a perfectly normal metal sphere.
I see. If that is true, then why hasn't someone stepped forward to make claim?
Well, I wonder that very same thing. And
do you have any theories about that?
Well, no. I'm very much wondering why it seems to me that if it were perfectly normal and natural, that somebody surely would have said, "Well, I've got one like that in my garage," or our company makes two of those a week," or something like that. And the fact that no one has come up with that, despite all the publicity the thing has had, does puzzle me, I must say.
Yes, Professor Hynek, when I left the story on Saturday, I was told that the sphere was considered solid. However, three balls on the inside, I believe they were called balls, were believed to be there, and that they were embedded in the material. What's the latest on that?
Well, the thing is definitely not hollow, at least not largely hollow. There must be some spaces in it, because when you shake it, something inside definitely rattles. But the X-ray show indicates that there's no sharp line of demarcation between the shell and anything on the inside as it would be if it were hollow. The mean density of the whole thing is only 2.2, that's just slightly more than twice that of water, whereas, of course, stainless steel is nearly 8, so that it's certainly being solid stainless steel throughout is definitely ruled out. Furthermore, it would weigh very much more.
Have we ascertained what material it is here?
The outside part, the Navy said, is stainless steel number 431. A standard alloy. Also, one thing that puzzles me is that the sphere is almost exactly 8 inches in diameter, within as closely as we could measure it, and it would seem odd to me that the English system of units of inches would be used rather than either the metric system or some strange system for outer space.
Professor Hynek, given the man-made, given that it's man-made, how do we account here for the orbiting of the sphere?
Well, I think we account for that largely as a little bit of wishful thinking. Certainly, it did not behave that way when my colleagues and I examined it. In fact, I had to keep it from rolling off the table several times. It would have rolled off under my toe.
I don't understand. In other words, it did move, but it did not orbit. Did it move of its own accord?
No, it only moved when you itself. And, of course, one thing it does, since it is fairly heavy, as it moves along, it unbalances the table. It presses down a little bit, and it might seem, if the table weren't completely level, it might seem to be moving by itself. But that is not the part that intrigues me.
Would you tell me what part does?
Well, the one point that does is the fact that several witnesses have said that when the dog was brought near it to be photographed along with the dog rolled over and put its paws over its ears as though a high-frequency sound was coming out, not audible to our ears, but audible to a dog's ears. Now, the ball is very probably coming here to Northwestern in a week or so, and then it could still seem worthwhile if somebody hasn't come up and said, and I hope that does happen, right? Oh, I can identify it. This is model number 326 in the Sears catalog or something.
It can't be that easy.
It can't be that easy. Because, at least it wouldn't be last year's model.
There's a machine somewhere that it fits.
there's something that it must fit.
Well, I have heard in respect to spheres, sightings, various sightings of balls, orbs going through the air. I've also heard one theory that, let me submit to you, that because it was seamless, that it may have had a seam, but coming into the atmosphere, because of the heat, the seam was removed. Do you find any credibility in that?
No, not at all, because it's entirely possible to have it essentially seamless. One thing that did happen is I've had phone calls from manufacturers, one manufacturer here in Chicago, who said that they are capable of making a sphere out of two halves, but using electron beam welding, which makes such a fine weld that even the X-ray doesn't show it, they say. Now, the X-ray did not show any seam. So, but on the hand, the thing looked to me not as though it had been welded, but it looked like it was a casting. I'm not an expert in those things, but I've certainly seen enough castings in my day. And, you know, the casting, after it's taken out of the mold, has these tiny little sand pits, and it then has to be polished and burnished before it's nice and shiny.
Yes. Is there any explanation? Well, were there pits in the ball, or there were no pits?
Definitely, there were.
There were.
When I went down there, I had the impression that I was going to see a shiny 8-inch ball bearing. But not at all. It's not bad at all. It's nicked considerably and badly scratched. And it looks like when whoever did the polishing job did not do a uniform polishing job all over the thing.
Is it possible here that the press may have blown this up out of proportion?
That's always a possibility.
I'm entering that as a realm of possibility and not fact.
Well, as I mentioned, I think in our conversations together before.
Earlier, dealing with the National Enquirer?
Pardon?
Dealing with the National Enquirer?
Yeah, the National Enquirer enters into this picture only in this way, that had scheduled several weeks ago to have a meeting in New Orleans. By we, I mean the five-man panel from the National Enquirer, which is quite an autonomous panel. It's supported by the Enquirer, but we're five professors from various universities, and the panel is definitely autonomous. And we were to meet, and did, in order to decide which of the many UFO sightings of 1973 deserved a prize. That is, the Enquirer gives a prize each year for the most interesting, most scientifically provocative UFO sightings of the year. And that was our main job, and we did decide that. But as you might say, sort of almost a sideline, this ball was brought in to be examined along as the panel was there. And if the Enquirer thought it would be a good idea to turn their panel loose on it and see what we could find. Well, what we found is that we had no obvious explanation for it, and the panel simply recommended that before anything definite could be said, we had to have some more tests.
I see. Regarding tests, and I'll ask you about that in just a moment. May I, are you at liberty to say who else is on that blue ribbon panel?
Oh, yes. There's no secret about that. There's Dr. Cregan, who is a philosopher at the State University of New York at Albany.
Okay.
There's Dr. James Harder, who is civil engineer at the University of California at Berkeley. And Dr. Leo Sprinkle, who is a professor of psychology at the University of Wyoming, and Dr. Salisbury, who is a plant biologist at the State University of Utah, and myself.
Okay. How do you anticipate, when the sphere arrives at your laboratory, how do you anticipate researching what you have?
Well, it depends on what funds are available, and not that many are needed, but certainly a slight amount would be. And my own time, but I can tell you very, very, very briefly, since I'm sure that our listeners are not too crazy to hear about a lot of technical details.
Well, you'd be surprised.
But basically, the test would be going down the line: acoustic, mechanical,
yes,
magnetic, spectroscopic, and X-ray. And going down the line quickly, the acoustic ones, I want to see what the resonance frequency of the sphere is, if it has any preferential resonances inside. Also, how it transmits sound, very much the way a geologist will tell where the Mohorovitz discontinuity is by the way earthquake waves travel through the earth. Similar, we'll see how sound waves would travel through this. That requires a fair sophisticated apparatus. Then the X-rays, of course, are essential because if we could cut the thing open, then that would solve the whole thing, probably. But
ruin it for someone else, I would think.
Ruin it for someone else, and it's such a nice ball.
You're very philosophical about it. I'd like to ask you when you think you'll have any firm conclusions, if at all.
Well, I think once we get around to testing, I think we would have some fairly firm conclusions very quickly. But it's up to the boy now I heard today that he has decided to send it up here. At one time, I thought I would probably bring it back with me on the plane last night. Of course, I don't know how I would get it through security.
Put it in a bowling ball bag.
That's probably the way.
Take it through.
Then when the machine stops me, what do you got in there? What sort of a bowling ball is that?
It, Professor Hynek, it sounds like a very human problem. I tried to philosophically think through some of the questions I would like to ask you about outer space and about the UFOs. I've already told you I'm coming into this conversation with some skepticism. I also told you, and I went back on my word, that I did not want to bring too much prejudice into this conversation regarding your book, but the temptation got the better part of me, and I picked up your book. I've been scanning through it. But let me give you an observation and then throw some questions at you, and then I'm sure people in the audience would like to ask you a few questions. Along with the scientists, the poets have looked upward to the sun, they've looked to the moon, they've looked to the stars. For example, Vachel Lindsay, as you're probably aware, he saw the north wind as the north wind is something that bites at the cookie, which he called the moon, and the south wind was the baker, thus creating a crisp new moon every month. And Sandberg looks to children and uses the phrase like the silent yellow thing. But Robert Frost, and I've mentioned this to you before, suggests that we pick something like a star to stay and be stayed upon, to sort of celebrate an unknown, to reap a satisfaction from the mystery itself. Now, Professor Hynek, when you look up, what do you see?
Well, I see something which I do not consider an accident. I think it requires a much greater degree of faith to consider that the universe is a series of accumulated accidents, or that the human race is, than that there is some sort of, I hate to use the word plan, but some sort of system to it, rather than just an accident. I'm speaking here not as a scientist, but simply as a human being, I guess. I have, while putting it more rationally, perhaps, I find that I have a profound respect for the universe, its complexity, the atomic level to the largest galaxy. It's just wonderfully put together.
Yes. Are we not, in this respect, from observations of viewing the universe, are we not still children in the science?
Oh, tremendously so. I'm reminded of Dr. Burbidge, who gave us a colloquium some time ago discussing quasars, which are now...
Are we speaking of Teller's quasars? Is it Teller who...
Yeah, he has theory about quasars.
Okay.
But Burbidge came here and said, as he opened his colloquium, he said, well, there are only two questions that remain about quasars. What are they and where are they? And that's, you can extend that to a considerable extent over all of astronomy. I sometimes have a fantasy of picking up a physics book or an astronomy book that is printed in the year 5000 A.D., I feel that if I could project myself into time that way, I'd find great disappointment that I wouldn't be able to read the book. But I think by the year 5000, our knowledge of the universe is going to be so vastly different than it is now that people then will look back upon us as we look back upon the cavemen.
Yes. It's amazing in this respect that in 1890, the Victorians thought that they had reached the height of civilization. Are you saying that you're looking forward? You're taking a modest view here, are you not?
Oh well, I teach history of science, and I'm only too well aware of the many times that the complacency, the inability of people to make no allowances, or rather, the inability to make allowances for the not yet known.
Professor Hynek, are you not being modest here? The way I assess your work and your book, which I would view as a compendium of the UFO experience, are you not in a very firm position as emerging as the father of the new UFO science?
Well, I'd never thought of it that way. I got into it essentially by accident. As I mentioned, I think someplace, I'm a little bit like the innocent bystander who got shot. Because at the time I first got into it, it was way back in 1948, I got into it simply because I was an astronomer and not in spite of. The Air Force needed an astronomer to help them, and I happened to be the handiest astronomer around at the time.
What was your relationship you've become somewhat controversial you must be aware of that. So what is your relationship to the Air Force at present, given that relationship you had?
No relationship at all. When you say the Air Force, there is no such thing really as the Air Force. It's when somebody says the Air Force says or does, it's for just what some particular group of individuals say or do. So I have amicable relations with many individuals in the Air Force, and no problem.
Have you found yourself, in this respect, censored at any point in your career as an observer of the UFO experience?
Never deliberately censored. I don't know what effect it may have had on some of the proposals I've made to NASA and to NSF for projects. There are many, many, and I must say that in many of them I've been successful. In fact, I have a NASA and an NSF contract right now, but also an Air Force contract in a totally different field, however. But one can never tell whether it militated against me. For instance, I had one proposal in for a small telescope to be placed on the moon with Apollo 16.
Yes, sir.
The point is that there were so many good proposals, so they couldn't possibly fund them all or accommodate them all, so that I'd be the last to say that the UFOs had anything to do with it. But one can nonetheless always be just a wee bit suspicious.
Let me ask one final question before I open it up for forum. And I'm quoting you from your book now, page 194, from the UFO Experience. As a junior in the ranks of science at that time, and not inclined to be a martyr or to make a fool out of myself on the basis of incomplete data, I decided to remain neutral and let the phenomenon prove or disprove itself. Where are you in the position now? You feel it's proven on UFOs?
Well, it depends on what you define as a UFO. If you feel that it definitely means a visitor from outer space, I'm still undecided.
Visitors from outer space, you're undecided.
Yes, but if one says that... Hello?
Yes, we're here.
Yeah, that a UFO is simply a misperception of something common, like that all UFO reports can be explained as misperceptions of birds, balloons, Venus, aircraft, then I say absolutely not. I would challenge anyone on that.
I notice in your preface you use misperception slash hoaxes in juxtaposition with misperception. May I ask you specifically, what is a misperception here?
Well, a misperception is seeing something and calling it something else. Since a person sees I had a report just last night of a brilliant light in the east at about 4:30 in the morning. And I said, well, I'm sure that was Venus. They didn't know what Venus was. Venus was there, and they mistook Venus for something else. Now,
and a hoax would obviously be something manufactured.
A hoax is something that's deliberately manufactured, yes.
Okay, Professor Hynek, let's take a call.
Right.
Okay, line one, you're on the air with J. Allen Hynek. Go ahead.
Yes.
Could you identify yourself, please?
Yes, it's Beverly.
Okay, go ahead.
And doctor?
Hello.
I wonder, in regards to your sound readings, and I'm assuming that you are taking some type of sound readings, and the fact that you mentioned the dog, are you going under DBs or DBAs or ANEs or CFRs, in other words, on use of noise, unwarranted sound, or are you going on the basis of bringing in the dog again, say ultrasonic sound, or are you taking in effect vibration and taking in subsonic sound?
Well, essentially, we'll be taking an audio spectrogram. It'd be instrumented, a very, very good professional microphone, one that's capable of going to 40,000 cycles, and then connected through an audio filter, so different bands, different frequencies can be eliminated, and seeing, essentially taking a, making a Fourier, effectively a Fourier analysis of the sound output.
Well,
I don't know. I didn't get all the initials you were using. I'm not familiar.
Well, they keep changing them under the decibel readings, mainly to confuse people. They're all meaning the same thing, the sound of a decibel, but not bringing in ultrasonics. This would be simply pertaining to a regular sound, unwarranted noise, in other words. But I'm thinking of one thing, and this would be with, have you done any tests with, say, someone who would have difficulty in hearing but would hear unusual sounds, and the fact that you did bring the dog up. For instance, a youngster who is starting to go through difficulty in hearing, one of the first things that we find is the hum that they hear from a telephone pole, which other people do not hear.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, but we're speaking of a dog here.
I'm speaking of people here because he brought up the sound that the dog heard.
Okay.
That was objectionable.
He heard, yes.
So, in other words, are you also experimenting a little with some people who have some hearing flaws who hear things differently than we hear?
Well, that would be a good thing to do, but I think it can be done so much more definitely by having meter readings for the sound output that... the dog was essentially just an indicator that something might be going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've had meter readings out here for dBs and for decibel readings, and they don't pick up the hum from the telephone poles. But one suffering from a loss of hearing will hear that hum.
Yeah, I see. Well, that's very interesting. I didn't know that.
So, thank you.
Okay, Beverly, thank you. Mm-hmm. Let's take another call. Hello. You're on KTW with J. Allen Hynek. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Dr. Hynek.
Hello.
Could you identify yourself, sir, by some name?
Norm.
Okay.
I've been interested in what you've had to say throughout the years on this, but I wanted to know one question. When do you feel this country or the world itself will be ready for the truth if this ball happens to be from outer space, if it's checked out?
We've pretty much ruled that out, I believe, now.
Pardon?
Well, we've ruled it out from the basis of present evidence, yes.
Oh, I see, huh? Well, let me just say briefly what I experienced quickly in 1954 in Mason County, which is near Olympia, Washington, our state capital. I was rowing into the lake, turned around, looked up, and, well, distance I couldn't say exactly how far it was away, but it was just almost as plain to me as looking at our space needle in Seattle, and here was this huge disc object hanging up there, and I turned to my nephew and I said, "You see what I see?" And he looked, he saw it, And we were excited. Believe me, we were. Well, it was considerable distance off, and it was a clear day, about 1 o'clock. And then we turned and tried to attract attention to people on the beach. They couldn't see it because of the trees. And we rode frantically for the beach, and it probably was about 20 seconds at the most. We looked up again, and I mean, this was way out there, so it couldn't have hit itself. There were no clouds in the sky, and it was gone just like that. And so I am a firm believer. I saw what I saw.
A daylight disk.
Pardon?
I would classify that probably as a daylight disk. And I described that in the book as giving several examples. Those things are reported. There's no doubt about it.
A daylight disk, huh?
Yeah, daylight disk. That's what the disk is.
But what does that mean? Does that mean outer space, Professor Hynek, or does it mean within the realm of terrestrial?
No, you see, in the classification system I've used in my book, I was particularly careful to use a classification that did not imply adherence to any particular theory of origin.
I see.
In other words, just a plain operational description.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I don't think the country's ready for it if they were suddenly to come down and step out and say, look, we're here. It would just destroy. I think the economy or the world, is the people would panic. So I think we're going to hide this for years and years and years, as we have done, and till they suddenly are here. And that's my thought about it.
Okay.
I do know what I did see, and I'm a rational person. That was about 30 at the time.
I'll take airtime now, but would you be kind enough to write me a description and give me a drawing of that and send it to me here at simply the Department of Astronomy at Northwestern University in Evanston?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it isn't much to describe. It was the disk shape, as you always hear about, and way off. I couldn't see any figures on it or anything like that, or windows. It was too far away.
Yes. Sir, I should move on to some other calls, but I'm sure the good professor would appreciate a note from you.
Thank
you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you spoke in your prologue about a certain smugness. This gentleman was saying that the time is not ripe for this sort of thing. I don't necessarily agree with him. Do you think now the impossible becomes possible, Professor Hynek?
Well, I think it would be entirely in the manner of presentation and whether there were any signs of overt or covert hostility. I think that if people could be convinced that the whole business, if it were from outer space, and I'm not saying it is, I mean, the subject of UFOs is far more complex than the average person realizes. A lot of facets to it. But anyway, suppose we argue the hypothesis that these are intelligences from outer space. Then, if the evidence indicates that they are benign and here to help us, then I don't think panic would occur. But if suddenly there some evidence is given that they're in search for a new source of protein, then it will be obvious panic.
I see, and none of us can forget the effect of Orson Welles.
That's right.
With the radio program of his. Let me remind my audience of one thing, Professor Hynek, and then another call. Spokane's Expo 74 opens May 4th, and KTW will broadcast the opening ceremonies live and starting at 11:15. Be with us for Expo 74, May 4th on KTW 1250. You're on the air with J. Allen Hynek. Go ahead, please.
Is this me?
It's you. Would you identify yourself, me?
Yeah, I'm Joel.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask the good professor. I haven't had an opportunity to read the book yet.
Could you speak a bit louder, sir?
Oh, I just said I haven't had an opportunity to read the book yet, but I will be doing that. But I was wondering if maybe it's already in the book, but is there anyone or any report that's reasonably valid of any material evidence or artifacts that have been examined from UFOs?
Are we getting into von Däniken's theories here?
No, that's an artifact. Artifacts at the present time rather than ancient artifacts, I believe. Very, very little. There have been some things which seem to be substantiated, but we can have to say bluntly that there have been no UFO has left an interstellar screwdriver around or a monkey wrench or something that you'd say, well, yeah, this is something that definitely is not here on Earth. And it just hasn't happened. So I think we have photographs that I think are probably genuine. We have reports and sketches made by people whose testimony certainly would be respected in a court of law. in any other circumstance. But we do not have, and I have to, I mean, as a person much interested in the subject, as much as I would like to be able to say, we simply do not have what the physicists would call hard data in the sense of having spectrograms and meter readings and movies and this and that.
Joe, let me thank you for calling. I want to move on to some other calls.
I wondered if I could ask one other...
Quickly, if you will. We have many calls.
Yeah. Well, the other night, about a month ago, I was driving home. It's about 1 o'clock in the morning, and I was attracted by a bright flash in the sky, and I turned to look, and I saw this fairly wide streak in the sky, and then a kind of a teardrop-shaped burst with... kind of a blue and red colors in it, and at first I thought it was a meteor, and then when I thought about it, it was too wide a streak. Well, I've seen a lot of meteors. It didn't look like a meteor. It was too bright and flashy for that, and someone had said that it might have been a piece of space debris or satellite debris that may have come in. Is that fit any description that you know of?
Well, it certainly would fit the description of a satellite reentry or space debris reentry.
Okay.
If it lasted relatively few seconds and had left any sort of a trail, it was either a bolide, that is a very bright meteor, or a reentry of a space debris.
I see. Thank
you. Well, let me thank
you. I wondered about it.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
Okay. It's apparent to me, Professor Hynek, Dr. Hynek, you haven't lost your sense of humor about some of these issues.
Well, one has to keep that.
Okay, let's take another call. Line 4, you're on the air with J. Allen Hynek. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Don Lee.
Go ahead, Mr. Lee.
And my question is, I would like to know, Doctor, what other, besides the Navy, government agencies have been involved in this investigation at all?
Now, which investigation? The ball?
Of the ball.
Oh, none, to the best of my knowledge, and for a very good reason. The Navy has a naval station right in Jacksonville, and it was the most natural thing in the world for the Terry Matthews to seek advice there when he found it.
Well, what you're telling me then is that there has been no interest in by any other government agency at all.
That's not true.
To my knowledge, there hasn't been.
Oh, wait. It was my impression, Dr. Hynek, that other governments had contacted Terry Betts. I'm quoting Mrs. Terry Betts here now.
Well, then...
Jerry Betts, excuse me.
Then this would be information that I don't have.
Yeah, I will send you that tape, as I promised you.
All right, good.
Of the information she passed along to me. Did you have another question, Mr. Lee?
No, that's my only question.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right.
Goodbye. Okay. Line 6, you're on the air. Go ahead with J. Allen Hynek.
I was going to say that about, you know, I'm 41 now, but I was about 18 years old. I was hitchhiking through Portland, and this guy picked me up. He had a truck full of cement and stuff.
Speak louder, sir, yes.
Well, we've seen a object like that in the sky about 3 o'clock in the morning, and he had to stop the next stop, and both of us seen it, you know, and drink coffee all night until daylight before he could go on, because it was just hovering right over Portland.
I didn't get all of that.
Well, what this gentleman said, Dr. Hynek, was that he was hitchhiking when you were 8 years old, sir?
Yes.
And he was picked up by a gentleman in a cement truck, and there was a sighting at, what, 3 in the morning?
Yeah, right over Portland, Oregon, right the center of town.
And
big oval object.
And they were both quite shaken by the experience, and spent the remainder of the evening drinking coffee.
And we never did report it. I never have. I don't know if he has.
Well, I'd like to make a quick remark about that. I know from my experience in interrogations of people for many, many years that there must exist a huge reservoir of unreported cases, because whenever I ask how many people have had a UFO experience, I may get quite a few hands. But then when I ask how many of those people who raised their hands in a question period in a lecture, and I ask how many of you who have raised your hands, thus indicating that you had a UFO experience, how many of you reported it? either to the police or to the Air Force, and I get a very poor showing then, indicating that there are lots of people who simply have not bothered to fear ridicule.
Well, would you not fear that yourself, Professor Arnie? Just as the average guy on the street, what would you think? You don't. People don't want to be laughed at or known as kooks.
Well, I think in my case it would be particularly serious to report it if I didn't have witnesses. Because suppose that I suddenly had a very close encounter UFO experience tonight, and I were alone. People might very easily say, well, I've been working with this subject so long and so absorbed in it that I finally slipped my lid, so to speak.
I see. Hey, you have never had a sighting yourself, have you?
I've never had a close encounter. I've had two sightings of things in the distance, and I still don't regard them really as UFOs because there's an outside possibility they had a natural explanation.
You mean sightings through the glass?
No, not through a telescope, just simply with my unaided eye.
Can I explain this a little further on this?
Yeah, if you can, sir. We have other calls.
It was a little, you know, the sky was clear that night. It was hovering right over down the main part of town of Portland. It was about 3 in the morning. It was a great, it was huge. It wasn't nothing real small. But it was oval-shaped, and it was real silver. And the sky was completely clear. And we both seen it, and we said, first stop we come to, we're going to have some coffee. We sit there all night long. Then I come to Seattle the next day. And that's been, I'm 41 now, and this is about 17 or 18.
Would you be interested in corresponding with this gentleman, Professor Heineck?
Yes, I would. I'd like to have that.
Okay.
One of the early cases. And I also want to point out to your listeners that we have here a thing called the Center for UFO Studies. It is composed entirely of established scientists in various universities like UCLA and Stanford and Colorado and Johns Hopkins and so forth. We are interested in the UFO phenomenon on a scientific basis. And one thing we definitely do is we promise anonymity, that is, we'll not use a person's name without their specific permission.
Mm-hmm.
So that if you would be willing to submit your report,
I will give the address at the conclusion of this program, Dr. Heineck, to save you that trouble. Listen, let me thank you for calling, sir.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye.
Okay, you're off the air. Okay, how do you feel? Would you have time for a couple of more calls?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay. You know, what I might suggest, Dr. Heineck, is read your Marshall McLuhan again and use the medium. One commercial in primetime television, or one public service in primetime television asking for requests, would certainly give you a lot of data to deal with. Have you ever thought in those terms of national television for soliciting the opinion or national radio?
I have thought of it, but to do an advertising thing of that sort is a costly thing.
Well, it strikes me you're well within the mode of public service, and but there is your potential. You see, since I started discussing this business between the sphere and then your book, people have been phoning me in the evening and explaining sightings. Emotionally, I can't handle them. I'm a little conservative about these things, and though my I'm somewhat shaken in my confidence these days. But
this is good. I think that I'm glad to know that you are conservative. I'd much rather talk with a person who's conservative and then finally feels that, well, maybe there's something to it, rather than somebody who swallows hook, line, and sinker to begin with.
Yes. You see, it's your academic credential that draws me to you as a source, and now you become a strength for other people who before would not venture forward. What I am afraid of is that there must be some psychological tendency among some people to have these sort of stories to deal with in their mythology and the projection of what they believe and what they see. I want to ask you, what do you think of is it Frank Edwards?
Yes.
Does he hold weight in your opinion, that author?
He's been deceased.
I understand that. Under mysterious circumstance.
No, a heart attack.
Oh, someone told me otherwise.
No, I don't think so. He was a very good reporter and very much interested in the subject. But being a reporter, he was and I don't mean to decry reporters in general, but he was interested in a good story, and he wasn't always too critical about the source or of going in and checking out the facts. But most of the things he talked about were basically substantiated.
Well, let's take another call, sir.
Sure.
Line one, you're on the air with J. Allen Hynek. Go ahead.
Yes. Jacob Davidson, State Director, MUFON. Dr. Hynek, I have 2.5 questions. I'll ask the half question first, and I'll be brief. I'd like to know if you've received the Gil Bernier photographs and report that were sent to you about 6 months ago.
I must have been, but why don't you write, drop me a note about that and remind me what it was. I don't throw things away, so it's probably here.
Okay. Question number two. According to Cregan, the board has tentatively endorsed 7 reports. When is the inquirer going to render a decision on the cases already submitted?
Well, the decision has been rendered, but the inquirer reserves the right, so to speak, to announce it in the inquirer rather than through the panel.
Okay. Number three, subdivided question. In the September, October, November flap, one of the things that was quite pointed was that the phenomena was blatant, the antics at least. How do you interpret this?
Where I didn't get one phrase. The antics were what?
Blatant.
Blatant. They made their appearance known, or it appeared that way. They've never been as blatant in their antics.
Yeah, well, that seems to be so. They certainly seem to be... here I'm being anthropomorphic somewhat. It would seem to us we could ascribe to them that they seem to be more blatant. But I hadn't really... What impressed me was not so much the blatantness as the sheer numbers.
Okay.
And also, I think the significant thing about this flap in 73 was not so much the blatantness, let's say, but the fact that here was a situation where a great many people said the subject was completely dead. The good doctors of science, namely Dr. Condon and his cohorts, had said there was nothing to it. The Air Force had stopped Project Blue Book, and people in general said, well, this is it for the UFOs, they've had it. And then, you see, without benefit of clergy, so to speak, they came back in full force, and not only in this country, but in other countries.
Okay. The last question, it's
sure.
A personal question.
That's 3.5 now. Go ahead.
Okay, well...
Go ahead.
Okay. Very personal question. In reading articles that are coming out about you, you've shown a certain liberalness in your interpretation of the phenomena, at least you seem to.
Interpretation of the what?
Of the phenomena, the UFO phenomena,
okay.
With regard to what it may be. It appears to some people that it has a relationship to other phenomena. Is this a hard admission? Well, it's not quite an admission, but is this seeming relationship hard for you to admit to?
Well, as a physical scientist, yes, it is hard, because my whole training is essentially, you might say, a nuts and bolts training. But I think I know what you're referring to, that some of the aspects of the phenomenon are, would seem to have paranormal aspects to it.
Yes.
And those would be sort of hard for me to admit. And yet, the Dragnet program said, all we want are the facts, ma'am, you know.
Yes. I might suggest in this respect, Dr. Hynek, and to this gentleman, starting at 1 in the morning, we'll replay this tape and we'll continue the conversation dealing with UFOs far into the evening until 5:30 in the morning. So any input regarding this program or regarding personal experiences and or evaluations, pro or con, can certainly be carried forward in that forum later this evening. Sir, I'm going to take you off the line now. I suspect you'll be back later this evening. Right?
Yeah, goodbye.
Okay, thank you very much.
This,
Dr. Hynek?
This brings up a good point here,
yes.
Simon, and that is that you'll probably be able to garner quite a bit of interesting information tonight.
Yes, that's already happening, sir. I can tell you that.
How are you going to process it, as they say?
Well, that's your problem. I just ask the questions.
How will it get to me?
I'll see that you... I've put you down on that
right.
List.
That's what I meant.
I'll be happy to. It would be flattering for me to think an esteemed professor like you would listen to my tapes. I'm just a showman, sir. Let's take one last call, and then I'll have to let you go.
Okay.
Okay? Go ahead. You're on the air with J. Allen Hynek. Oops, anyone there? Hello. You're on the air with J. Allen Hynek. Go ahead. Anybody there? Professor, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, let's try one last one. Anybody there? Oh, I guess they all fell away. Let's try one last. Anybody there on line five?
Yeah, hello?
Go ahead. One fast question,
okay,
sir.
I was wondering what he thought of the author of Chariot of the Gods, Eric von Däniken.
Well, that's opening up another can of worms.
We can't solve that one in a minute. Do you have a fast opinion on that, Professor?
Simply say that he's raised some, shall we say, provocative questions, and let it go with that.
Okay, thank you very much, sir.
Okay, thank you.
I want to ask you one final question, and we have about 30 seconds to entertain that, sir. To whom do you pass your knowledge now? Who will be your students, philosophically speaking?
Well, the Center for UFO Studies hopes to publish a quarterly review or something of the sort, which will... there's no point of doing research if you don't publish it, and so we've got to find some means of doing that.
Okay. Professor Hynek, may I also ask you, may I count on you for some report after you've made your conclusions?
Surely.
And I will send you all the tapes. Let me thank you very much for being part of this program, and we're about to go off the air, but thank you very much. I appreciate it, and I'll give you your address.
Right on.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye.
Goodbye. We've been speaking with J. Allen Hynek, the author of The UFO Experience, a new book, A Scientific Inquiry.